Hey everyone, it's Andy Johnson from the Fried Egg. I had a great trip out to Sand Hills over the weekend and an awesome chat with Kyle Hegland, their superintendent. We sat down in between rounds in the Sand Hills Library and the conversation just kind of started, so we ran with it. So that's why there's no usual introduction. Enjoy the podcast and be sure to subscribe to the newsletter to keep up to date with all the other Sand Hills content that will be posted over the next few days. As always, thanks for listening, and without further ado, here's Kyle Hegland.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
How many superintendents have a wider range of temperatures than you have here?
I would guess not many. I mean, it's, you know, we have a lot of things that really go in our direction. Like, but the temperature extremes are tough. Like, we had a day 2 years ago in November. It was 77 degrees on a Sunday at, I was in Wisconsin. It was 3 years ago because it was when Michigan State played Ohio State and got our asses kicked. And, I was in Wisconsin visiting family, and I seen this weather come in, and my assistant, and I'm like, hey, we got to tarp greens right now. So I called them Saturday night. They started tarping Sunday morning, called all these high school kids, everybody we could get. And then I got it. It takes me 12 hours to get home. I got here about 7 o'clock in the evening, and it was still 70 degrees out. And by noon the next day on Monday, 13 below zero.
Oh, my God.
13 below zero. Like, we got everything done. We missed, like, one spot on six, the back right corner there. Our tarp was ripped, and we got that done 2 days later, and it died. Like, that's how, like, we could have lost all the greens in that, like, in that quick. So, it's not more or less difficult. It's just different, you know. You have to be adaptable out here. You just won't make it. And you have to, superintendents love regimes and schedules. I hate, like, if you start telling me your schedule, then I stop listening to you. That's just a fact. I just don't. I don't dig that. So, and we just can out here. So we just try to be creative.
I drive people nuts because I never have a schedule.
I like you already.
Yeah. I don't know what time my tee time is for, like, a tournament until I set my alarm at night. And I look and say, oh, I gotta get up at 6:30.
My brother is just the, like, he would plan out tomorrow right now to the minute. Like, I can't.
No.
Just makes you too constricted, and you just can't do it out here in my position, because if you try to say what the weather's going to do, you're just going to get your ass kicked. And
it seems like it just...
That happens. So,
yeah.
So we have a lot of those. We have, you know, and it can be 110, and, you know, we had, the year my son was born, 2012, we averaged 102.3 was our daytime high average. We were like 112 for like 7 days. And then we've had, you know, like this August, we never got out of the 70s for 2 weeks in August. So, I mean, it just goes up and down. We're at 3,300 feet elevation. That's part of it. You know, it's a very unique little spot in the country, and the weather comes in and out pretty quickly. And if you don't have shit together, you're going to get your ass kicked, you know. That's just what's going to happen. So, but we don't deal with humidity. You know, we don't have hardly, that's as much humidity as we're ever going to have is on a day like today. You know, we just don't get a lot of that.
It wasn't really humid. It was more windy.
It was, yeah, well, I mean, even then, it's still a little sticky for me. My sister lives in Milwaukee, and I was back visiting her this summer for just a couple of days, and it was the week before the U.S. Open. I'm like, oh, my God, how did I live here? Like, it was like 80 degrees. It was just unbearable. It was so thick and sticky, and so we don't have to deal with that. So,
tell us about how you got into being a superintendent, like, you know, and, you know, your job's working up to Sand Hills.
I needed a job. I played baseball, Legion ball, Junior Babe Ruth, and I needed a job that got me done early. So I had some buddies that started working at a golf course in New Glarus, Edelweiss Country Club. It's nothing fancy. Started working there, liked it, thought it was fun. Had never played golf before, none. one time. Started playing a little bit of golf. Worked there, I think I was a sophomore. I don't know, maybe I was a junior when I started doing that. Mm-hmm. So I worked there through high school in the summer, and, you know, you'd work in the fall and what have you. And go to college my freshman year, University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. Just didn't really, I didn't know what I wanted to do. As most kids that age don't know what they want to do. And my superintendent, who I didn't even know that, I didn't even know that was his title. He comes up to me, he's like, "Hey, you ever thought of doing this?" I'm like, "Doing what? What is this that you do?" And, you know, so he just started talking to me. He's like, "Hey, you know, this, you kind of got a knack for it, and I think you'd be good. You should take some classes or something and see if you like it." And that's what I did. And I don't know why, I just liked it. And next thing you know, I'm transferring to Michigan State, and from there I was all in. Was really fortunate to, I had one of my really good friends was had worked up at Crystal Downs, if you can believe that. Okay. And I didn't even know what Crystal Downs was at the time. I had no idea about golf architecture or any of that. And I just went up with him on some weekend when I was at Michigan State, maybe a couple weeks in, and was like, "Holy shit, what was that all about?" And then that's where my love for golf architecture really started. And I was like, "I got to know more about this. This is amazing." And I, so you got to do internships, and at Michigan State, you got to do a 6-month, you know, an internship, an extended one. And I just knew I didn't want to work where they had winters. I grew up in Wisconsin. I hated winter. So just got lucky. Wanted to go work for a real talented superintendent, and that was Doug Peterson, and they were just starting to build, you know, Austin Golf Club, which is Ben's home club in Austin, Texas. I went down there, and, you know, they're in the middle of building. It's Ben and Bill, and not Bill as much as he is on most projects, but Dan Proctor, Dave Axlin, James Duncan, all those guys are down there, and I'm just a stupid 20-year-old kid just trying to not say anything stupid, and they were awesome to me. They just let me listen and just be a fly on the wall, and included me in all that stuff as just an intern. And I was all in. I was living with my boss, Doug Peterson. He had a wonderful library like this of golf architecture, and he let me just read. So I'd go and soak it up all day, and then I would just go read, George Thomas or, you know, the Lynx or that kind of stuff at night. And I was all in. I was all in.
So what's your favorite architecture book?
Oh, man, there's so many good ones. I really love, you know, Mackenzie's The Spirit of St. Andrews. I try to give that. That's a book I've gifted 25 times, I think. I think you can still get a GCSAA show for, like, $5. I think I still have, like, 10 copies of it. If you even kind of like golf architecture, you should start reading that.
I gave that a buddy of mine wanted. He's like, "Let me get a golf course architecture book to read." And I gave him that, and he read it. Yeah, he read in like 3 days. He was like, "Oh, that was awesome."
And it could be, and it's so true today. I mean, so many of his things are still, you know, whether it's bunkers or maintenance or, you know, committee. It's
the 13 principles.
Yeah, it's so good. And there's so many good, I mean, there's a lot of great books, you know, Shackelford's books. And, you know, I would just stare at that Cypress Point book, like, just like, you know, like, I think kids that are 20 probably stare at, you know, a Playboy or a Maxim or whatever. I was just, you know, Cypress Point book going, "Holy shit, what is this?" And so I'm a golf architecture dork, and I was fortunate to just go work for some really great people that harvested that and challenged me to be a good superintendent, or, you know, up and coming superintendent. So then I got to go back and work for Doug, and I worked for him for, I'm old now, 7-8 years, and and then Dick took a chance on me. I was 27 years old when I got this job, which seems kind of scary when you say that out loud right now, you know. He entrusted me, and I'll always be grateful for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, to be honest with you, they interviewed she was my fiance, now she's my wife. They interviewed her harder than me. They wanted to make sure Ashley, my wife, was going to be okay living in Mullen, Nebraska, and we're fortunate. We love Mullen. We're fortunate and have, you know, it's like family out here to us. And my kids are Mullenites, and we're proud Mullen Broncos, that's for sure.
Hey, state champs in basketball.
They are.
That was huge.
Very proud of that.
Very proud of that. An unbelievable story.
It is a great story. Rusty Moore, their head basketball coach, is my closest friend. And, I mean, I tear up a little bit just thinking about it, honestly.
It's kind of like amazing. a real-life Hoosier story.
Yeah, well, it's what's great about sports, whether it's golf or basketball or whatever, when you see kids work hard and accomplish something that they worked hard for. And that was a lot of fun.
So you moved from Austin, Texas to Mullen, Nebraska.
Yeah.
So when
that's a stretch.
When you came out here for like your first time, yeah. I mean, like, what was? I mean, did you just fall in love with the golf course and then, you know, figure this is a once in a lifetime opportunity to, you know, work at maybe arguably the world's greatest golf course, or, you know, the greatest modern golf course for sure.
I was roommates with a kid who's a superintendent. His name is Tony Nice, and
he's down at what is it, Old Marsh?
Old Marsh, yeah. And he reminded me that I told him I was going to be the superintendent at Sand Hills when I graduated from Michigan State. I kind of forgot that. I just always was in love with what Sand Hills was. If you'd really told me I'd have ended up here, I would have said bullshit. But yes, I understood the gravity and the largeness of what I was coming up here to interview for. And, like, you know, I looked at my fiance at the time and was like, hey, if you don't think you can do it, then we can't do it. Mm-hmm. But in reality, I was like, we're gonna do this. <You know? laughs> but doing what I do for a living, you know, I'm fortunate, I'm blessed. I try not to be that guy, but we just try to smell the roses a lot and try to have fun. And there's not a lot of fun in the golf industry anymore, and everyone wants to bitch and moan and complain about how hard it is or how difficult it is. And I'm not saying it's not. I just like to have. We have a lot of fun, and we enjoy being where we're at. We don't take it for granted. We work hard. We think we do really good work, but we think we have as much fun as anybody does. We encourage, you know, our interns and kids that work for us to play golf. Have fun. Mm-hmm. Go out there and play. I'm biased now, so I can say it. What I think is the best golf course, you know, I've ever been on. And I want those kids and people to go out and enjoy that. It's a pretty cool backyard. So.
Yeah. The thing I take away from this place is, like, I mean, you can hit every type of shot you want, and it never forces you to hit one unless you put yourself in a position that you have to hit one. But in terms of from the fairway, I mean, it's the strategy's unmatched in terms of, hey, there's this really intimidating, I think the scale is what does such a good job, because it intimidates you.
Yeah.
And it forces you to play safer than you might want to, because you're like, I don't want to be in this 25-foot bunker. And then once you do that, every single foot off that aggressive line, you get a worse and worse angle, and you pay. And it's a beautiful thing for the people that believe long grass is the answer to defending par.
Well, you know, it's our philosophy. It should always be about playability. We want you guys coming out playing golf, having fun. You know, I'll quote Bill directly. I do it all the time. My guys get tired of it. Hey, golf's supposed to be fun, you know? And we just want you to have fun. So we want it to play hard, firm, and fast. We want you to not lose any balls, if humanly possible. And we talked about that earlier with you guys about how you guys made a comment about our, you know, our native grasses being, you know, quite playable. And we're really, really proud of that. That's a lot of work and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears making those what they are. But we're very, very proud of those, because we want you to go out there and go, hey, I hit some bad shots. I didn't lose any balls. I mean, you guys are out there today. Wind was blowing 35 miles an hour.
I didn't lose any.
Yeah, that's awesome. No. I mean, that's a huge compliment. I take that as a huge compliment. You guys didn't say it was a compliment, but
no,
we're proud of that. And I know that's what Ben and Bill want. You know, I've talked with those guys a lot about just, you know, I think superintendents lose sight of that a lot. Like, they get worried about how it looks or what this is going to do and how it's going to. We just want it to be. To play the exact way that Ben and Bill wanted to play, and we strive hard for that, to be as playable as possible as many days as possible.
So. I would say that the natives have to be one of the most important aspects of the golf course. And I mean, I was at a golf course a couple weeks ago, and it's a newer course, and the course used to be an apple orchard. So they have trouble with their natives because of the apple trees, you know, sucked so many of the certain nutrients out, and then there was such a, you know, a ton of the other nutrients. And so this native stuff, I mean, it's like 7 feet high. It's it, and it, 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 they didn't know that because they didn't go through all the testing, which would have cost a lot of money. But, you know, in terms of native grasses, it's one of the hardest things to maintain well.
Well, I mean, man... How many pictures have you guys seen where you see this picture of native grass and it's like the most sterile, like, man, I don't want a monostand of anything. I don't want a monostand on my fairways. I don't want a monostand on my greens. That's not natural. That doesn't look natural. That's Ben Crenshaw, what he thinks of a monostand of anything. And native is the most striking thing. If it's just, you see it all the time, just this perfectly manicured fescue that's 4 feet tall and you'd lose every ball in the world in it, like, A, that's not native, and B, that doesn't look natural at all. I think we miss that a lot, and we try not to. We try to make sure it looks... We'll take those imperfections. We're okay with some broadleaves. We're okay with some other things in there. That's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, we want you to look out and go, man, that golf course blended right into the rest of its surroundings instead of stuck out. So at
Austin Golf Club, you worked your internship there, and then you immediately got hired there right after?
Yeah, after I graduated, uh-huh. Yes. So you got just a lowly second assistant, yes. Uh-huh.
So you got to see that golf course mature over the years. And,
yes.
And just, I'm kind of curious in terms of, like, how you see, like, you know, how long does it take a new course to really finally settle in and become, what is it, like, how patient, you know, is it 3, is it 5 years, is it?
It's a good question. I think there is, I think every site's a little, I mean, that's a really a cop-out of an answer. Every site's a little bit specific. You gotta have the right leadership and be okay with, you know, the slower the better. Let's get it all right the first time so you don't have to go back and correct some of that stuff, and you're not gonna get it all right the first time. I mean, that's just not the way. You're not going to just swing and hit every, you know, you might want to move this grass line or take these trees out or wherever it is. At Austin Golf Club, I would say, yeah, it took a couple. I think we opened in 01. Man, I'm old. I forget all that stuff now. But it was probably 2 years before you really get all your stuff really dialed in. Mm-hmm. That's a hard golf. Have you played Austin Golf Club?
I haven't.
Oof, that's a hard golf. That's my opinion only. That's the hardest Coren Crenshaw course I've played. That's a hard golf course. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it took a while to mature that. And we moved tree lines and we moved grass lines around quite a bit here and there. And it just takes some time. And we're still doing that at Sandhills. We do that every year. So we're over 20. So, you know, Ben and Bill always want a golf course. You know, that's initially how they described Sandhills. And how we got into some of the issues with some of the bunkers is they just wanted them to breathe and grow and be, you know, an organic experience. But what happens is our winters are so harsh out here. Like those bunkers, mm-hmm. You want to talk about, they would go hundreds of yards. And then you're, not only are you destroying grass and everything else, but you're losing some of the intent of some of the original mm-hmm. bunkers. So then they started figuring out that they really had to work hard to keep bunkers where they were. And man, it was my first year. I don't get any credit for it, but we started spraying a product in our bunkers as soon as we closed called Soil Tech. Sets up like concrete in them, and then we till it all out in the spring when we're done. But then we don't have to worry about those bunkers going anywhere. And once we figured out that we could keep the sand where it was over winter, then we started figuring out, like, hey, this is what we got to do. This fairway bunker is 5 feet deeper than it needs to be. And we're, you know, those two fairway bunkers on one, those were 6, 7, 8 feet deeper 6, 7 years ago than they are right now. You hit them in there as wedge only out of there. And I mean, Bill and Ben, I can't imagine if they'll listen to this or not, but they would laugh because I was like, this is way too hard. This is not how they intended these to play. So I just started bitching and moaning and complaining enough that, like, we have to do something to these. And I worked with Dick, and we took it very, very seriously because you can't just go in to our native start tearing grass up and moving sand around because those scars will be there for 5, 6, 7, 8 years. So we kind of had to be creative, and we thought we came up with a pretty good plan, and here we are. You know, we're just about done. We got a few more bunkers we really want to work on, and we'll always have a couple bunkers mm-hmm. just because of the way nature moves out here. But mm-hmm. We're proud of came up with just a very low-key, small plan and pushing, you know, moving sand in and just being methodical, saying these are the five worst bunkers. Let's get those done this fall. And if we get some weather that holds up, let's get five more done, you know, and just going from there. So that's kind of a long way to answer the story, answer the question. But
hey, it's a I'm process. Long-winded.
I apologize.
No. And it's interesting. I mean, there's... So when you're closing, you know, most people wouldn't know this.
Monday.
You're closing on Monday. And
yes.
You said to me earlier in the week that that's when the work starts.
Yeah.
So you know, I think Sand Hills is unbelievable. I think from like your end of the spectrum is you've got 100 plus degree summers, and then you get to winter and it can be negative 30 out here. So what goes into prepping for winter?
The first thing we do is spray soil tech. I mean, that's like project number one, because you guys are out there today. If it's super dry and it's blowing like that, I mean, you can move quite a bit of sand in a day, but we'll get days where it'll blow 55, 60 for 24, 48 hours straight, and that can straight move some sand. So our biggest thing is let's get those bunkers cleaned up, held in place, get those out of the way, and then we just start top dressing everything. And it depends on each year and how, you know, we might have some bunker work that we're working on, but first thing we'll do is we'll probably just, you know, like a solid tie greens and surrounds, and because we can't, nobody's out here playing. Once we're closed, nobody plays the golf course again. So we just pull,
don't lie. If it's 75 in October,
I'm not 15. Saying I haven't hit some shots out there, but outside of myself and Jared Kalina, you know, nobody plays out here. So, that's what we try to get at first and foremost. And then as, you know, we just let see what the weather does. And we keep, if weather holds up, then we keep working on bunkers. And, you know, we always have some cart paths. You know, that's not very sexy or fun to talk about, but those are all native cart paths. So those take work too. And we do that. And then we just start looking at the weather. And as soon as we think the weather is going to, you know, it's a little bit of a gamble, you know. We're trying to keep it wet as soon as we're closed. Like, I don't want to water anything, and then once we close, like, we want to be moist. So if all of a sudden the weather falls through the bottom, we're going to go in. Our biggest goal is to go into winter as wet as possible, because that just keeps us from drying out as long as I don't want to work any harder than I have to. And what we have to do in the winter, if it dries out, is we have to winter water, which is not a fun process, and it's not rocket science, but that means we're out there in those terrible days. And
yeah, what's the coldest it's ever been when you've been out doing stuff on the course?
Oh, well, it's just hard to gauge. I'm so used to the wind anymore. It's just how hard is the wind blowing? If the wind is just howling and it's 40, it's pretty miserable out there. Yeah. And we'll have days in the spring where it's just like, shut it down, because you can just see people getting angrier and angrier as that bunker keeps pelting them in the face, or, you know, or just the wind even. So what we want to do is close up, and then we're thinking about we tarp greens and tees, which are bent grass, and that's usually somewhere around Thanksgiving, and then we blow out our irrigation system sometime after that. It's usually within a week or 10 days of each other, and then we sit back and hope we get a bunch of moisture. If we get a bunch of moisture, you start crushing, you know, spotted cows and gray goose. And if not, then you got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
So we hope for, we usually stay pretty cold and pretty dry through December and January. And then we usually, you know, the weather starts really fluctuating in February and March. And that's when you can get these really massive, you know, temperature swings where it can be 55 in the day, 13 below at night. You know, that's hard on grass.
Yeah.
So we think we've done a good job. I've been here 11 years. I would like to think we've gotten a little bit better each year. And each, you know, our biggest challenge is coming out of winter. So if you come out here in March and you're walking around and it sounds like you're walking on glass, it's not good. So I've had those years. We hope we don't have many of those years left in us. But and a lot of that is work in the spring and the fall, whether it's aerifying and deep tining and planted airing and doing all that kind of stuff, and lots and lots of top dressing. I don't have to pay for sand. I get to top dress with the same sand that the whole golf course is built on. Believe me, I know how nice that is, but we throw a lot of sand. We just bury everything in sand in the fall completely. So we'll top dress greens and tees and fairways, and as soon as we're done, we'll just start again. We'll just start again continually until the weather goes to hell. We've done it as many as four times, you know, before the weather goes completely bad. And then in the spring, same thing. We'll just keep top dressing to, and that helps with playability. That helps us keeping it firm. And eventually, it was pretty thatchy and organic-y when I got here 10 years ago. And if you'd have told me it had taken me 10, 11 years to get it where I kind of like it, I'd have said you're crazy. But it's a game of attrition, and, you know, you get a little... You're 27, you think you're a lot smarter than when you're, you know, 37, so.
Well, also, I mean, if it's over 10 years, I bet, you know, it's accumulated a lot of, like, you know, material in the soil, so it takes a long time for that material to get out. You can't do it overnight unless you just started fresh.
Well, you know, and we don't want to do anything during the season, so, which is a little bit of a challenge I'm certainly not complaining about. You just got to be creative, and what we found is... You know, when I first got here, it was like, oh, man, you really should try to get an aerification during the golf season. And I was like, okay. And now it's like, why would we try to do that? Like, mm-hmm. we can just – it made me be more creative and made me push the boundaries of what we can do with how we're trying to do things. And it's made me a much better superintendent than I ever would have been anywhere else. That's for, I mean, whether or not I'm good or not is completely debatable. But it forced me to be creative. And Dick – Youngscap always forced me to creatively think my way through things, and he allowed me to make mistakes. And so we're proud of you guys. If we open the end of May, close the end of October, we'll top dress in there once in a while, but we don't do any cultural practices outside. You'll come out, it's supposed to be as good today as it was, you know, May 29th, mm-hmm. you know, in theory. So we like that.
When if you were going to say, when's the best time to come out here? I know you politically it has to be every day, but you got.
We're not that political. I can say it. I would say anytime after like the mid August to the end of the season, the weather is just a lot more consistently good. Like you're going to get some 95 days and you're going to get some 65 days, but mostly it's good. Like there's plenty of days in July where it's 105 and the wind's blowing 30 and it feels like somebody's just following you around with a hot air, you know, blower, a hair dryer, and that's not that fun.
So this course is kind of the course that changed modern golf design. It was the first one that it was done with an extremely small budget. It was built for the pureness of being a great golf course and not for like a housing development. And, you know, it brought back so many of the great golden age principles that you saw in a modern setting. So the man behind it all was Dick Youngscap.
Yes, sir.
So tell us a little bit about, you know,
tell you about Dick. Yeah. Man, I consider Dick a friend, and I mean that, and I think he reciprocates that. He is, I told you guys earlier, he has this great line of, I have a lot of faults, but being misunderstood isn't one of them, and I think that is lovely. He's my only boss. I don't have a committee. I don't have any of that kind of stuff, so we're allowed to be creative. You know, I can go, we sit down, we talk. If we have a problem, whether it's on the golf course or, you know, whatever comes up on a superintendent, it could be a staffing issue. We'll sit down and talk, get to the bottom of it, and move on. But he is a very unique guy, and I'm very, very fortunate to call him a mentor and a friend, and I've shared many, many, you know, Bud Lights with him, and I feel very, very fortunate. And he's just a very interesting, unique person. He has a very unique way of thinking. He likes being, if everybody's zigging left, then he definitely wants to zag right, and he wants you to, you know, do the same thing with your thought processes. And I could talk all day about Dick. He's a great guy.
What's the best story he's told you about about this place?
The best story that I can tell in public is, I think, it's because I got it from both sides. Dick and Bill tell the same story about how mad they got it at, how mad Dick got at Bill Coor for number four green. We talked about moving, you know, mm-hmm. where they pushed actual some dirt up, which is one of the only green, only places they moved any real soil outside of cleaning up the bunkers and stuff and a few other little spots. But they had sat down and talked, and they all lived together. I mean, they lived in one house, you know, so they had to go home every night.
Work,
you know, they were like a family. And Dick is not afraid to give you his opinion, ever, and I love him for that. I mean, sometimes, especially earlier in my career, and even now, I mean, if he thinks you suck at something, he'll tell you you suck at something, and that hurts your feelings once in a while. You got to be okay with that, but he's honest, and I love that. I couldn't ask for somebody better to work for or work with, and it's usually working with when it comes to Dick, but they both tell the story of they were sitting right in that little valley there, and they had to push that all up to make four green. And they're sitting there one night, and they had decided that Dick had thought it was going to not be pushed up, and they were just going to make that bunker kind of come around the front in that little low area and make the green right there. Where Bill thought that he said, do whatever you want to it. Go ahead, push it if that's what you think you need to do. So like 2 days go by, and Dick comes back, and here's this green pushed up to the way it is right now. And he just loses it on Bill. and they both do impressions of each other, and it's just, it cracks me up. I can still see them both doing it. I won't do it justice, but they're just, they thought maybe they were at a point where things were going to get pretty surly. And then, but that's Dick. Then it's over. You get mad, get done, get over. He would still tell you that hole's better not being pushed up, and Bill would still tell you it's better the way it is.
That's the beauty of opinion. By trade, he was an architect. And
yes, sir.
So obviously a very creative guy, and he, you know, I imagine that helped with the relationship with Bill and Ben in giving them kind of creative freedom in a way. Yeah. Would you say that that's one of his strengths, is like letting people do what they do?
Absolutely. I mean, I think Dick would make it simpler. He said it many times, is he was really busy down here on all the cabins and stuff. And you want to talk about somebody that's involved. He had his crew, you know, whether it was sewer, you know, all that stuff. He was doing all the infrastructure work, and there would be several days. He just trusted Ben and Bill that they were going to do the right thing most of the time. You know, that story I just told you, which is why I think it's funny, and because they were just pissed off at each other, and I think that's great. But he allowed them to do their job, but he was involved. They had a lot of conversations for a long, long time. And Dick tells a great story that he was just at, I don't know if it was golf weeks or whatever, they had a roundtable discussion where Dick was with Mike Kaiser and Ben and Bill, and they had this question come up to Bill Coor, and like, this lady asked this question, like, hey, it must have been so much fun building, you know, your time at the Sandhills. And Bill's like, oh, wasn't that much fun, you know? And I think that's a great analogy of, they all knew it was very important to everybody involved that they got it right. Mm-hmm. And I think that shows with the golf course. I can brag about it because I don't have anything to do with any of that. But they all respected each other an awful lot, and they allowed each other to be creative and have creative thoughts. And I think the product shows, you know, they didn't want to mess it up. You know, everybody involved, you know, Dick included. And I think they got it right. And I think they did a pretty good job.
I don't have many complaints. I don't think they really messed it up. And people probably know I complain a lot. So
that's me too.
It's ironic that we're here the same week that they're playing at Liberty National that costs $250 million to build, compared to, of course, that costs less than $1 million to build here. In terms of Bill and Ben, how much are they still involved, and how often are they out here? And, you know, what's your guys' working relationship like with, you know, continuing to make updates? And
man, humble brag. Like, I Bill will send me, like, emojis and stuff. So I think we're kind of friends,
yeah,
right?
That's friend zone.
No, it's... I talk to Bill when I try not to bother him. Bill is busy. He travels hundreds of days a year. Nice English. I try not to be a bother. He hears more from me in the spring and the fall when we're actually doing some work on the golf course. Ben and Bill were both out here for a week this year. We walked around some stuff and just, you know, we'll just go through the golf course, and as Bill would call it, a walk. We'll just go out and walk and talk about maybe this bunker, maybe that bunker, maybe this grass line, maybe that grass line, maybe this edge of this. You know, we just try to have a conversation. Then the next day we, you know, kind of sit down and, well, let's go back to that spot and let's go look at that again. And, you know, I don't know if I agree with what you're doing. You know, we'll just hash it out. So I'd say Bill's here probably every other year. Ben's here once or twice a year. So Ben being at Austin Golf Club, I know Ben really, really well. Mm-hmm. I have no problem, you know, approaching him. If I have any questions, we'll just talk about it. But, mm-hmm. you know, when it comes to golf course stuff, you know, I really don't want to bother Ben. He's super busy. So I'll just either call Bill or we'll send some texts back and forth. And we just want their intent to be right, you know. Mm-hmm. We just want the golf course to play exactly how they intended it. So.
Since you've worked closely with these guys for your whole career.
Very, very fortunate. Lucky. Yeah. Very lucky. I'm okay with saying that.
What would you say that each of them, what's each of their best traits and like what makes them so great?
I aspire to be as good a person as both of those guys are. They're just great people. I've seen Ben in Austin where he's like a rock star in Austin. And you could go to, I've been in a car with him at a gas station and somebody will just come up knocking on the door and, hey, Ben, you know, remember that time I... 10 years ago, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And he's such a great person, and like he remembers everybody's. He has an uncanny knack to always remember people's names and faces that he's met, and he's wonderful at engaging people. Bill is just straightforward. I mean, Bill is also a great guy. Bill has no problem saying he doesn't like something or wants to change something or why don't we try this? And he's very creative. He always takes his time to think out what he's like. He's not impulsive. He's very methodical. Like if he says, I don't like the corner of that bunker, that's not because he just walked up there and said, yeah, I don't like that. He looked at it. He thought about it. He probably went to bed. Like if I tell somebody like, oh yeah, I'll think about that. Like I forget about it. I don't think about it. Like I think Bill thinks about it all the way until he comes back and talks to you again.
He doesn't tell impressive. Somebody that he's thinking about it.
Yeah, no, I do that all the time. Dick's like that too. If he says he's thinking about something, he's definitely thinking about it. That's my get out of, you know, the way conversation piece. So, I don't know if I answered that question properly, but they're both, I talked to you guys a little bit earlier. They work so well together. I spent some time with them, you know, together, and I was giving them a hard time because they have a lot of the same mannerisms. Like, they work so well together. Like, you can just tell they just really trust and admire each other, and that's pretty impressive when you can be 100%, you know, confident that the person next to you has your best interest. You know, you can be honest, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm fortunate, you know, my old assistant, he's the superintendent at Ballymena now, is we had that, you know, we could just say, man, I think your idea fucking sucks, or whatever it is, you know. Mm-hmm. And that makes you better. And I think Bennett, I don't think they'll swear that much, but I mean, I think Ben and Bill do that, and they have that, and they have had that for a long time. And it's impressive to just shut my mouth and watch them do their thing and feel very, very fortunate that they'll even, you know, pick up the phone if I call or have a question. So
you got to have somebody that's honest with you. Like, I get emails from listeners and readers all the time that are like, I don't want to be an asshole, but you suck. And it's like,
I like that.
And it's the best thing because I don't even know. I say, like, I used to always say something about, like, it's interesting or something. And like, some guy like was like, you say this all the time. And I try and get better. I never thought I'd have a podcast in a million years, but it's, it's the only way you can find out you suck at something is if somebody tells you you suck.
You got to be okay, you know, and if we want to turn that full circle back to, like, Dick Youngscap's not afraid to tell you you suck. And if you're okay, there needs to be more of that. And I don't care what business
you're in. In life.
Just somebody that's like, hey, how about you not do that? You know? And as a young guy, there were several times I probably had my feelings pretty well hurt, but he made me a better person first and foremost, but definitely a better superintendent and someone that's just like, you can't be so defensive. I think superintendents are a real defensive bunch, and I try not to be as many times as possible.
I feel like they just, you can't be sensitive because there's at every club, every course, there's the vocal 10% minority who are just going to be mad about anything because they stink at golf and they just don't get it. And they're, just mad about stinking at golf, so they then take it out on the course. Or the
I agree. You have to. I mean, I'm not saying anything that's new. You have to have a thick skin to be a superintendent, but you also got to be okay with somebody like. They probably have some good ideas once in a while that you're just not listening to anybody. You got to be okay with somebody thinking you suck. I hope your boss is okay just saying you suck more than once. I know Dick would say I suck right now if I was doing. He might say I sucked at this.
Yeah.
If he'll listen to it.
Everybody stinks in some way. My whole theory.
Man, I'm terrible at a lot of things.
My whole theory in life is everybody's an idiot.
I like that.
And, you're a genius in some aspect of life, but an idiot in another. And if you don't embrace the fact that you're an idiot in some way, like, I'm an idiot if I have to plan anything. People are going to hate me.
I respect that. I like that.
But, what would be, like, if for other superintendents, what would, or, like, a greens committee?
Sure.
Say you weren't at a course that had
golf star. That's nice.
What would be your advice to like greens committees or superintendents or any members like in working with an architect like over time and like, you know, what would you say is like, you
know, the most important thing? I've already told you I'm an architecture dork, nerd, whatever you want to call it. I love that stuff. I don't think I'm an architect. I never had those aspirations, but I've given some talks. I love the conversation of. I think it's very interesting, and I'm going to steer it one way, and I'll go back and answer your question. I talk a lot. I don't think superintendents play enough golf, and I don't think that they know enough about architecture. There's Sean Tully at the Meadow Club. That guy is oh my god, he knows everything about everything in architecture. But it'll only make you a better superintendent if you know some. You just have to know the basics. You don't have to, you know, and I challenge guys to, and it's so cheap. You just get a few books or, you know, even if you're at just the little course down the road, like, pick up the phone. I really challenge people to, like, why haven't you seen, you live in Chicago and you've never seen Shore Acres or, like, make them turn you away. Like, call, you know, the easiest way, maybe I shouldn't say this, just call the superintendent. They're usually going to be okay. Maybe you're not going to play golf, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Go walk around the place some morning and just go, holy shit, that was pretty amazing. And don't be afraid to go look, you know, and superintendents really don't want to go to somebody else's golf course. I love golf. I love going to golf courses and seeing what other people are doing. And I feel very, very fortunate to get to do that. I wish more people did more of that. Just to immerse themselves in some of, just have a little working knowledge in golf architecture, I think, as a superintendent, is a very cheap and effective way to become a little bit better superintendent.
You understand the intent a little bit differently.
And you don't have to be at a Donald Ross or a Coora Crenshaw. I think every place had an architect one way, shape, or form outside of the old course. See what they're trying to think, and maybe you can make some suggestions that play the way, you know, or call that architect up if he's still alive, or, you know, or get, there's so many young, aspiring, great young architect guys out there, the Riley Johns, the Blake Conans, the Keith Rebs, all the Rob Collins, all these guys are so talented, and it's such a, like, superintendent's bitch about the market being tough for us, like, wow, go try to be a golf architect, those guys are so talented. You could just call one of those guys up, and they'd come out probably for little to nothing and just walk around and say, hey, why don't you just, what about this? And if that's what you want to do. Now, shifting into a greens committee, if you're at a place that has a great old architect, I think you should reach out to somebody. If the architect's alive, let's get him involved. If he's not, you know, they're like Jeff Mingay, there's so many of these guys that do so many great things. Just go make a phone call and say, let's at least get a plan. What do you think? Do you think we're doing it right? Let's get the architecture on display. And let's not worry about, you know, what can we do that's not going to cost us a bunch of money first? You know, maybe it's just a tree or two, or maybe it's just a grass line. That doesn't cost much.
Yeah. Grass.
We always get so worried it's going to cost you $10 million, and I understand that. But let's talk to the architect before we worry about, you know, doing the upgrade to the clubhouse or whatever it is, you know. And I think as a superintendent, depending, I know greens committees are different and some are 2 and 4 and 6 year terms, just start working those, like, hey, or maybe as a superintendent you need to have a relationship with some of these guys and go, hey, let's hear what this guy has to say about what he thinks we should do, I think. I mean, I don't know if that's really answering your question.
But no, that's a good answer.
It bothers me that we like to just put the blinders on and not play golf and B, not be worried about how the golf course is supposed to play. And it's some generalization, obviously. There's some really, really good guys that do really, really great things.
Mm-hmm. I put together a list of books. I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, but that's a smart idea.
I had a reader who is a librarian and informed me that 90% of the books that I had on that list were available at your local library.
Really?
So you could just go to a public library. You don't even have to pay for the books. You can rent them out. That's
awesome. And I've suggested more, like every course, especially if it's some. Every course has some golf dork guy that you or me or whoever that is more than happy to like, hey, yeah, here, go. Why don't you borrow these books and go read them and give them back to me, you know?
I think some people think I'm a menace because I just run around and I'm, look at how small the screen is. God.
I respect that. Menacingly. That's empowering. Right
there. Yeah, menace. Menace to golf courses. So how many Cora Crenshaw courses have you played?
Austin Golf Club, obviously, Sand Hills, the Warren Course,
that's a good one.
Sand Valley, Friar's Head.
What are your top three Cora Crenshaw courses?
Can't put Sand Hills in there because I'm biased. We'll just Chessie I've played. I'm just trying to think. I'm not very smart anymore. Friar's Head is really, really impressive. I have not got to see East Hampton. I heard that's really, really good. I would love to see Old Sandwich. I just have never got up there. The place looks amazing from the pictures I've seen. Sand Valley's really good.
Yeah. I
played that last fall. Man, is that good.
It's really good.
Really, really good. Austin Golf Club's fun. Austin Golf Club's really, it's hard, but it's probably the only, and Ben and Bill can dispute that, it's probably the only Cora Crenshaw that's little bit more Ben than Bill, you know, because mm-hmm. Ben's there all the time, and it has a different feel and look than the other ones that I've seen. I was at Seminole this winter. I was fortunate enough to go there and see what they're doing there. That's going to be pretty amazing. I've not been to Pinehurst number 2 since they've redone all that stuff. I'd love to get and see that. There's so much golf to.
You got a winter coming up.
I'm hopefully going to go see some. I love.
We got to get some moisture.
Have clubs will travel. I love. I've not been to Kapalua. That it looks cool. I know, you know, that was one of the first. They did that before they did this. I played the Crenshaw Cliffside. That's a mouthful. At Barton Creek. Mm-hmm. And that's a cool little spot, too.
Do you have a pet peeve?
Going to some great golf course and just not maintain the way that. And even marginally maintain the way it needs to be, where there's just no shots are available. Like, oh man, mm-hmm. that would be such a fun shot if you could hit that shot.
I played the course I played before I came here. We had a U.S. four ball qualifier at, and it's like they have a huge maintenance budget, and mm-hmm. but it's like the complete opposite golf czar of here. And the guy, he designed the course himself. It's a disaster. But then, like, you couple it with, like, it hasn't rained in Chicago, like, at all. So it's, like, the greens are really firm. But the fringes and aprons are so soft because it has to be lush and green.
That is a tough, that might be the toughest mix to play is super firm greens and everything else is soft. I mean, that is.
It's a disaster.
That is so hard to play. That is so hard. Maybe that's what the USGA needs to do. That is really hard to play.
Yes. What do you think the score would be out here if you had a PGA Tour event?
If it's windy, if it's windy like today, then who knows? But I just played with a kid a couple days ago that he shot even par. My good friend Jared Klein, who's at Ballyneal, is a really good player, and I played with him. He shot 66 out here from the tips. So mm-hmm. I think it just depends, you know. I mean. I played with Ben out here more than one time, and it's not like he took it super low. Course record 61, so.
Yeah.
But that was on a dead calm day. It's there for the taking if you know where to go. But if you just, if a bunch of guys come out here, and we could extend it quite a bit, too, if we thought we were going to have a tournament, which is not going to happen. You know, I think you could make it. It's kind of sad the way the golf ball has gone. I don't want to try to turn it into that conversation, but it's just. these guys hit you the ball the right audience. So far, you're like, every golf course is inadequate anymore. It's sad. It's unfortunate.
It just goes so straight, too. It's not just the far. It's like the ball doesn't curve.
No.
And especially with a course that's built for wind, when the ball doesn't spin, like, you lose some of the defense.
It'd be fun to watch them on a day like today when they're out there, and I would enjoy watching a bunch of tour pros go out and knock it around and see what shots, because they can hit those shots. I would just love to watch them hit it.
I had it going for a while, and then the wind just beat the crap out of me down
the stretch. It's tough when the wind, like, will dictate how your ball breaks, you know, because I'm not a good enough putter anyways, and when you got, you know, two or three breaks, and the wind will put, like, I'm not making that putt.
The way the course goes, the whole back nine, it goes out, and then it comes right back. And with that south wind, it's cross all. And crosswind is just...
South is hard.
It's just the hardest wind to play because you're constantly uncomfortable. You're not sure.
Totally agree.
It affects your distance and your dispersion, which is like, you know, like if it's into the wind, a good player knows how far the ball's going to go. If it's downwind, you generally know pretty much how far the ball's going to go. But those crosswinds that you get out here are just... That's the ultimate defense, I think.
The wind will, you know, this time of year it doesn't change a lot, but in the summer you'll get two winds a lot. Like, you'll get a morning wind, it'll come out of the south, and then maybe it comes out of the north or the west. And that's two different guys. I mean, you guys have been out here enough. That affects play a lot and how you're going to attack and what shots you're forced to hit. And I think that's a mark of a good golf course, I think, for one. Obviously, I'm a homer to my own golf course, but it's I've had a lot of fun hitting those shots and seeing what does what.
So what's your favorite course outside of Sand Hills?
Man, that is... I've been very fortunate to play some awesome courses. Humble brag. National. I mean, Ben and Bill will both tell you got to go see National. I've been... The guy just yapping at their tails all the time, asking them all these dumb golf architecture questions, and they're like, you got to go see it, and I've been fortunate enough to play it. It's wonderful. Cypress Point is really, really good. I was impressed by how good the inland holes were at Cypress. It's really good. Shinnecock's really good. Man, I thought Seminole, when Ben and Bill get done with that stuff, is going to be really, really good, too.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna like list all the really cool courses I've been.
What's your
Friar's Head is awesome.
What's your favorite hidden gem then? Like one that doesn't get talked about enough. That should be.
Man,
it could be something around here too.
I don't think people play Wild Horse enough. I think Wild Horse is such a world class golf course, and it's cost you nothing. And
it's under $50, right?
It's like just out of the cusp of me playing there like every single day, because it's like an hour and a half for me to get there, which is just like a half hour more than it needs to be. Josh Mayers was superintendent, was an assistant out here for a long time. Well, not a long time, a few years, and then he's been there since day one. And it's a really smart golf course, and it's always in great shape. It's always firm and fast, and it's you can go and with your buddies, and you're not going to spend $100. And I think we need more of that in golf, you know, and across the country. I don't care where you're at. It's just, it's wonderful. They ought to have a statue of that guy up there. I mean, he just, a good superintendent is, can make or break a golf course like that. And that place has been so good for so long. It's wonderful. Another one is, like, Cow Club is so good. Man, I thought that was just expertly maintained. It was just, you know, it was, you were hitting all the shots you were supposed to hit. Not everybody talks about it when you go to that San Francisco area. And you know,
Jeff Mingay, who you mentioned earlier, you know, he says that A.V. McCann might have been the greatest golf course architect that nobody knows about, because he was just building courses up in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, I was fortunate enough to go to Seattle this year. I talked to a bunch of the Western Washington guys. I'd never really been up there before, and talked to some architect about, and we went to Chambers, which I thought was really good. It was a terrible logo, but a great golf course. I thought it was
you gotta
really
go to good. That Lone Tree.
Yeah, it's something. I mean, I love golf. I love logos. I'm a logo dork.
I gotta send you my logo rankings.
Yeah,
I got a form. You gotta fill it out.
I'm all in.
I'm gonna reopen submissions.
Stuff. I have kids will just bring me stuff because I love that stuff. Anyways, and we talked about McCain and I love all that stuff. Like especially in something I've never seen. Like holy cow, let's go look at that little place and let's go. It'd be cool to see more and more of that. Mm-hmm. I never get up there enough. I think that part of the country is wonderful, and I just need to see more of it. You're right.
I think one of the issues with McCann up there is that there's a big tree problem.
Yeah. And
tree management programs up there are like planting trees.
Oh, who is that?
Tom Bob Order. Yeah, must be Tom, the Faz.
Calling in. Calling to check in on the ball.
He got his the number confused with the Cheesecake Factory.
I like that. It's funny.
I can't take credit. That's Zach Blair's. He's a,
that's funny.
He's got a funny story there. That's another story for another day. The legend out here, like, you know, it's not a legend, it's, you see it in here, 180 holes they found on this massive piece of property that's actually a small piece of property by Sandhill standards. Sir. Has there ever been thought about, you know, building more?
I think they entertained it a lot early on, you know, they were still just trying to figure out how it was all going to work, you know. You know, they really just thought they were just going to build this golf course for their buddies, and that was going to be it. They didn't have any aspirations. I think Ben and Bill did, but I don't think Dick that it was going to be this world phenomenon.
Yeah,
my words, not. But they've thought about it. You know, when you look at that constellation map, that's just up in the dining room, and I look at it a lot. I know that sounds super dorky, but it's I've been to all those.
If I were you, I'd have like one in my pocket.
I'll give you one. I have like 100 of them. So, and I've taken it off and photocopied it. Yes, I've done that. Anyways, you know it's a lot when you start. It's like how do you get it all to fit together? You know? They, you know, from what Ben and Bill and Dick have all said, it was always based on the principle that it wasn't always going to be 1, 17, and 18 were going to be actually 1, 7. But those three holes, it was all, like, those were always going to be there, no matter what. And they have some great stories of, you know, off the back of 4 green and going, you know, east that way was some that they really liked. And then there's a great story of where 12 is, you know, and, you know, they walked this property for a year plus.
Heard that Bill actually camped on the property. Is that true or false?
I cannot confirm nor deny that. I haven't heard that he camped out here. I mean, I think they were drinking plenty of Coors Lights and stuff. That might have been unintentional, but I can't confirm or deny that either. But a great story that a lot of people know out here that I think is always really interesting is 8,700 acres, which is a pretty small parcel of land out here. They're walking, and they've been walking, and they're where 12 green is, right over.
Yeah.
Our 13 green, and then 12, and there's that little maintenance path that goes between them.
Mm-hmm.
That used to be the property line, and they come back one day and like, Dick, Ben, and Bill, like, we need another 100 acres over here. He's like, you got 8,700? We need. So they had to do this like handshake deal where they had to reroute this parcel and, you know, going. It's a great story because Dick tells it talking to going, and I'll get the guy's name wrong, whoever owned the parcel of land there. I was like, yeah, can we just, you know, he's like, you want to do what? You know, like it's just not even fathomable to a rancher. Like, you just want to move that fence there for 100 acres? Like, What the hell are we doing here?
Yeah.
You know, but that gave us 12, 14, 15.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody would buy. 14, I think, is my favorite hole out here. I really like 14 a lot.
I think it's a spectacular hole.
It's
especially smart, with a south wind. Because it's impossible to hit the ball down the left side, as we found today.
And but don't hit it in those bunkers either. That's what I think is so great. Like, you get rewarded if you hit it left, but you get killed if you hit it too far left. And you can. I play with guys where you just tap in birdie and no problem. And other guys where you get up there and you make double because that green is, you know,
it's tiny.
It's just tiny, and it's just Yeah, I'm a fanboy, obviously.
How many that green can't be more than 3,000 square
feet.
No,
it's 2,600. 2,600. So it's tiny.
Yeah. It's
this time of year, you know, we don't fertilize really at all in relative terms. So I mean, you guys can see all those little plugs and stuff this time of year. It's pretty thin out there. So there's not a lot of playable pinnable locations on 14. So.
Yeah, it's I mean, either side you put it, it's tough.
It's tough. Just play it up like next to that short bunker. Left. Yes. Short. And then you have many options. But if you go right in front of the stuff on the right, that's a tough shot.
Mm-hmm.
I was just playing with somebody 2 days ago, and they hit it over the green and everything on top of the hill there because they just sculled one and like, oof, double bogey. Here we go.
Yeah. It's the best. I mean, and it entices. It's so short. It's a short par five. Yes. It's so short that it entices, you feel like you have to go for it. And I think that's one of the things that golf courses mess up so much is, like, if you have a short par five, just, like, let people try and go for it because they're probably going to get themselves in all kinds of trouble.
That's a really smart way to say it. I have stood so many times on that little hill, not down the swale, which I think is really, you get really rewarded if you hit it down there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, hey, just hit your 6-iron right there and don't worry about it. We're only 200 out. I can get there. I'm like, I've seen you play. You're not hitting it into that little tiny spot. Just, like, you're going to make birdie if you hit just a nice shot right there and be done with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they hit it in that bunker and they make double bogey. And you go, all right, here we go. And I've done that plenty of times.
So you want to do some overrated, underrated?
Sure, you're the overrated, underrated guy.
Yeah. Oceanfront holes.
I think they're properly rated. They're pretty, like, it'd be hard to stand on 15.
You got to pick one. You can't pick properly rated.
Brian Silva, I think, said properly rated. it was.
I gave Brian Silva a pass.
All right, I get no pass. Overrated because it doesn't make a great golf hole. It is awesome if there's a great golf hole and there's ocean there. It's really cool. Like I said, it'd be hard to say. You're on 15 at Cypress, and you don't go, holy shit, this is awesome. You don't get that here at all.
Have you played Dismal River? I hear there's blood there.
No, I don't think there's any black. But I got here 11 years ago. The original ownership, and it was a little bit of a difficult situation. But I'll give Dick all the credit in the world. We, all our employees are from Mullen.
Yeah.
They live in Mullen. They're part of Mullen. We're part of the community. My crew in the summer is 22, and they're high school and college kids, and I love each and every one of them, but we don't have, there's only 500 people in Mullen and another couple hundred in the surrounding area. The community takes care of us, and we do our best to try to take care of the community as much as we can, and I think originally that wasn't necessarily Dismal Rivers. And I'm not... Right. The current ownership, I think, is doing great things, and I think they will be nothing but successful, and I wish them nothing but the best. I play both those courses a bunch. I think I'm an architecture guy. I don't love the white course, the Nicholas course. It's a little, we talked about punch bowls. There's a bunch of punch bowls there, and it's just not my cup of tea. You can see a lot of hard. Where they pushed. It could be really hard. Really, really hard.
Bunkers pushed on the left sides of greens.
Yeah. And it's just, and I'm, like I said, I'm not trying to get, I wish them, we're not in, like everybody wants to say we're in some type of competition. Like,
no.
We have no desire to see them do anything but successful things over
all
there.
All boats rise.
Myself included. And their superintendent, Mark Stenzel, has been there for a long time, and they do the best they can with what they got. And I like the Doe course. The Doe course is a little interesting in a couple spots where, it kind of goes across the road and stuff like that. And I'm not, certainly not discrediting it. But, I mean, I'd rather go play Ballyneal. That's my opinion, though.
We're going there.
And Ballyneal is wonderful. Really, really good. Really, really good.
Who's your favorite Golden Age architect?
Oh, I'm such a, I like the McDonald Rainer stuff. But I'm probably, my eye is probably more drawn to the McKenzie stuff, really way out on the limb of the fringes of the, like, two most common guys. Those three guys are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But I was gifted that Simpson book
I gotta read that.
Oh my gosh, those draw, like, I've never, like, I, they're in, they're enchanting. And I feel like a little kid. Like, you're like, I'm just looking at the pictures, just like, oh my gosh, look at this thing. Mm-hmm. Looks pretty amazing. I just need to see more stuff, I think.
Overrated, underrated, playing with 5 clubs or less.
Oh man, totally underrated, because I don't play, I only play with 9 clubs regularly.
Really?
Yeah.
What are the 9?
Driver, utility wood. I don't even know how to count. Putter, 1 wedge, and then
you only use 1 wedge?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not good enough to hit. Like, it's just better if I just leave my that lofted, high lofted wedge in my shop, so then I don't even try to hit it. I just hit my punch and run shot or putter, and I'm good. Mm-hmm. That's mentally. That's probably because I'm just not good enough to hit it. So, I like guys that are. I have played golf with Bill Coor and Dan Proctor, and they each took like 3 clubs when I was like 20 years old, and we were playing Austin Golf Club. And it wasn't even open, and they just kicked my ass, and I had a full set of clubs. And I was like, man, I got to get a lot better at golf than this.
That's how I tell.
So I think people hit, you got to hit shots in that way. I love watching people be creative and hit shots, which is why I like being at Sandhills. I love watching guys hit fun, cool shots. And I think the less clubs you have, the more inclined you are to like, well, if I just pinch this down and see what happens. So,
do you have like a spot where you watch golf from all the time? That nobody knows that you're watching.
Oh yeah, I have several spots that I enjoy. This is no secret. We sit at the porch a lot and take bets on how bad you'll miss putts on 9 all the time. 9 is like the most difficult green to read the golf course. It's something
it's so hard
I just
to hit.
Can't I kid? That is a hard golf hole. I love that golf hole, but man, that hole kicks my ass all the time. So we will just be we'll sit there for. You have a lot of fun when you're busy and just like, oh god, this guy's not. He thinks he's getting it up and down. That ain't happening.
It
helps if you have a beer or something on hand. So
yeah,
or a Grey Goose or whatever floats your boat.
Is it? They don't have any events here, really.
No, we have one tournament, our member, which is our big deal, and it's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and it's only been six years that we've done it. It's been really good for, like, it was always interesting because I know 96% or 97% of the members on a first name basis, and like the staff knew, you know, like I'm the least tenured of all the managers. I've been here 11 years, you know, by quite a bit, and it was always interesting, like, how they didn't. You know, like members wouldn't necessarily interact with each other because they just didn't know. You know, you can come out, you can bring seven people with you, and what are the chances that you know who the member is? You know, there'd be a few, but not a lot because these people are spread out all over the country and the world. And what the member did is really build a lot stronger bond. People knew who they were, and it's been really fun to watch these guys, you know, build friendships that you could kind of see, like, you know, like, oh, I could tell that guy and that guy would be friends, and whether they're, you know, Minneapolis or New York or Austin, Texas or whatever. So that's our only, we had a high school, like a junior thing a couple of years ago that I thought was pretty cool. That was Dick's big thing. He wanted to, we don't have any ambitions of having like a tour event or anything like that. So it was fun to go watch a bunch of junior players go and have fun and watch them go, holy cow, this is pretty cool that they get to come out here. And we were fortunate to have them out. So that was cool. Do we do some more of that? Probably. I don't know.
It'd
be fun to host like a Walker Cup. I love the Walker Cup. I think I've been fortunate enough to was at, you know, the Walker Cup at National and at Chicago Golf, and I think that's just such a cool event. Like they get it. Like every where you're walking with everybody, that's pretty cool.
That would be pretty awesome.
That'd be fun. I don't know if we could do it not that anybody has approached us or anything, but I mean I don't know if we can do it logistically, but it'd be fun.
You could house the players and officials and then let everybody else fend for themselves.
I don't make those kind of decisions, right. But it'd be fun for me.
I make them in my mind all the time. So.
All right, we've made them. Let's do it.
You got my vote.
I like it.
And I've got 0 votes. So, let's say last one, overrated, underrated, Cornhusker football.
Oh, man, so overrated. I'm a Michigan State Spartan, so I will say that because I'm very, very fortunate to call Mullen my home, and these people have been wonderful to me and my family. They've taken us in as part of their family since my wife Ashley and I moved there. It'll be 11 years in January. And they tolerate our Spartan fandom, you know. Like, when we went to the Rose Bowl, I mean, I cried. And I had so many phone calls from friends and people that were just excited. They were excited to watch. You know, that's Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And I feel very, very fortunate to call this place home. So that's just me giving them shit. I hope they get it figured out. They're passionate. It's a great place to watch a football game. You can go as an opposing fan, and you're not going to get in a fight or anything like that. And if you haven't been, you should go. I'm a huge college football fan. Cool place to watch a game. And they're good people, but I think they lack some offensive line play right now, and their defense is a little slow, and I think it's going
to
be a long
day. I hate to hear what you have to say about my Illini then.
Cause I didn't watch the game last night. I had to watch. We had a Mullen Bronco football game, so I had to be there for that. So, but I have not. I think Illinois. You guys will figure it out.
We got Lovey. It's a process. We got to dig out.
You guys always like come up with like a really good team like every
10 years,
9, 10 years. Yeah. That team with Mendenhall, they were good. Gone, terrible again. For yeah.
We should never have fired Ronzuk, and I can't believe that's like what I believe.
What about, how is your basketball guy?
No, around? We're not any good at any. We're good at golf.
Oh, well, that's I like that.
Yeah, so.
I like that.
But thanks for coming on,
man. Thanks for having me. It was fun. I was a little nervous that I hope I don't sound like too much of an idiot. But
no, we'll see. You sound smart. I'm the one that's the idiot.
It was an honor. And
we're all idiots.
Yeah, you guys need to go out and play more golf. So yeah. I won't hold you up any longer.
We'll do it again. We gotta get you on and talk architecture more.
Please, I appreciate that.
All right,
thanks, Andy.
Thanks.